south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, here we go. Let's take an email. This one comes from Dave. Well, naturally. And I'll paraphrase this and cut out the boring parts. I say, naturally, because I've got so many Daves writing to me. He says, hey, Johnny. Me again. Long time no write, but I'm still a big fan of your show and listening to every episode. I know I'm not Dave number one, but I'm thinking I must be up there since I've been listening and occasionally writing since 2015. He says, this Dave thing seems like it must be a generational thing. A lot of Daves in certain generations and a shortage of Daves in others. I remember there were five Daves in my second grade class. That said, Johnny, I'll get to the point. He says, I know that if you have a Latina wife or girlfriend, keeping her down on the farm in Latin America is the accepted wisdom for success, that is. You've stated that many times yourself, and probably good advice in most cases, especially when you're dealing with clueless green gringos coming to Latin America and hooking up with Latinas. Yep, keep them down on the farm. That's good advice. But I guess, and I'm here to tell you, I'm one of those exceptions. I'm happy to report my wife is still the same kind, loving, honest, hardworking, and beautiful woman I first met in Colombia back in 2008. I married her in 2010 and brought her to the Great White North in 2011. You know, Canada. One of my best friends up here is also married to a Colombiana for almost the same amount of time as me. So now, Johnny, you indirectly know about not one, but two romantic success stories that beat the odds and are going strong up in the first world. All right, me, Johnny, here, just a little comment. You longtime listeners know, whenever we hit on the subject of love, romance, mating, and dating in Latin America, that is, gringos coming down and hook up with Latinas, or gringas coming down and hooking up with Latino guys, you'll almost always hear me and others say that it's the kiss of death to bring them back to the States or Canada to live. From all the stories I've heard, it almost never ends well. You've heard me say I don't know of anyone who's ever had success with it long term. And that's what Dave is referring to here. He's saying he and his buddy are the two exceptions to that rule. Then Dave says, for what it's worth, Johnny, there is a 13-year difference between me and my wife and a 15-year difference between my buddy and his Colombian wife. Anyway, thanks as always for what you do, Johnny. Coge la suave, and above all, stay, he uses the A word here, awesome. Signed, you're still married to a Colombiana and living in the first world, podcast pal. One of the original Daves, Dave W. P.S., he says, great to hear those expat Eddie stories are coming again. Keep them coming. Sorry to hear things went bad, though, with his Novia Claudia. Oh, and he's got another P.S., PBS. A little update on my situation, he says, in case you're interested. I'm 61 and my wife is 48. We both work for the same company, which went fully remote during the pandemic in March 2020. We took advantage of that, he says, to work from Mexico for 6 months from 2020 to 2021. But then the company restricted the work from anywhere thing to 6 weeks per year. He says, I'm about 2 years away from retirement. I'm saving furiously, and my wife... we'll have to work another 2 to 4 years longer than me. We'll wait to get out of Dodge until my meager government pension kicks in. But also, we are supporting her parents and partially supporting her sister's family in Colombia, too. Our main plan, he says, is to escape the Canadian winters for 5 to 6 months per year and then spend the rest of the year up in Canada. He says, you know how us Canadians are hamstrung. The velvet handcuffs of the so-called free health care often make us stick around. We can never cut the cord completely or we'll lose our national health care. And that often makes us who want to get the hell out stick around anyway. Oh, and he says there's also the fact of our ridiculous housing bubble. If we ever sold our condo, I don't know if we ever could afford to buy one back at a later date. Anyway, he says we're just trying to work out a balance between the best of both worlds. All right, Dave, thanks for that. You did hit on a couple of additional points we really have to discuss here. Number one, The fact that Canadians, anyway, because you have a national healthcare system, have got the problem that if you leave the country, what is it, more than 6 months a year, you lose your healthcare. Permanently, right? I hear that from Canadian expats and part-time Canadian expats all the time. That's a huge concern of theirs. They just don't want to lose that free national healthcare. And to me, you know, unless you're really old and in rotten shape, it appears you've completely bought into that socialist mind virus. That promise of free stuff from your government, like national health, like it's a golden calf. You just can't live without. Well, I'm here to tell you, you can live without it. You shouldn't let that guide your life. You should never let anything government does guide your life. I'm saying that because anyone can come down to most any Latin American country and pick up some absolutely first-class private insurance coverage, equal or better than anything you can get up in Canada or the U.S. Oh, but it will cost you. It's not free. Mine cost me, I'm guessing now, about $80 a month. The thing is, though, you won't be able to pick up any of that cheap private first-class health insurance if you're over 65 or in noticeably terrible health. Like, for example, if you're obese or have uncontrolled diabetes. Which is why I always advise gringos and expats who are somewhere along on their plan B to come on down and apply for private health insurance before they turn 65. Because once you're on it, once you're locked in, you're locked in for life, as long as you pay the premium. Though, there are some Latin American countries where you can get private health insurance if you're over 65. But, of course, your options are limited. In fact, let me tell you a little boots-on-the-ground story that happened to my brother. Just in case you're thinking you'll never get incepted by a private insurance company here in Latin America because, well, you're a typical American or Canadian and have just way too many things wrong with you. Let's say you're 50 pounds overweight or have too many pre-existing conditions. You know, I hear that a lot, especially from Canadians. They're saying, look, I got this great national health care system, and I know if I apply for private insurance in Latin America or anywhere, there's no way they're going to accept me. I'm taking 5 prescription medicines. I've had my gallbladder taken out, knee surgery, a couple of stents. I'm 55, and there's no way any insurance company is going to accept me as a client. If that's your line of reasoning, well, obviously you don't know too much about how they do things here in Latin America. Just listen to the following story. One of my brothers, remember I told you in a previous show, happens to be the stem cell poster child. He's the one that went down to the Dominican Republic a few years back to get stem cells. Of course, I was there holding his hand all the way. And he liked the place so much, he started going back and forth, especially since he met a girl down there and they became an item. Well, after about a year or so of him going back and forth to visit her, they got pretty serious and were talking about marriage. My brother said, look, I'm going to retire in the DR. But if I do, what happens with my health insurance? He said he has really good coverage up in the States, but they're probably not going to cover anything if he gets sick in the DR. And I said, well, let's check out the private insurance companies in the DR and see if they'll cover you. One of the biggest ones in the DR is called Humano. H-U-M-A-N-O. That's human with an O at the end of it. It's a very good, high-quality private insurance company in the DR and other places around Latin America. I know lots of gringos and expats who are living in the DR who have that very same insurance, and they swear by it. They've got 5 or 6 different plans to choose from, too, like a VIP platinum plan all the way down to a very basic plan. With prices for a single person ranging around $40 a month to $200 a month. With gringos and expats generally picking the plan that's second from the top. The top plan covers you worldwide and costs for a single around $200 a month. The second from the top, which I think is called the Maxi plan, it's around $90 a month, but only covers you when you're in the DR. By the way, it covers 80 to 90% of everything with, get this, no deductible. So anyway, I mentioned this to my brother, and he says, wait a minute, you forget. I'm on 11 different prescription medicines. And he said, I'm about 25 pounds overweight. He said, no insurance company's ever going to accept me. Well, he was lying. He was about 50 pounds overweight. You know how people lie about stuff like that. Anyway, I said, let's give that insurance thing a try. What have you got to lose? You know, the only real hard and fast rule they have for cutting people off is by age. If you're 65 or older, they won't take you. I said, I know lots of guys, even fat, totally out of shape guys, obese guys, who've applied and were accepted. After all, this is Latin America, and the insurance biz down here is sort of new. The private insurance companies at most have 5% of the population signed up. So they're always looking to sign on new clients. So we went down there. He filled out the forms. Or I should say I helped him out and filled out the forms. They were in Spanish. Now, when we were filling out the part about pre-existing conditions, and man, my brother's got a ton of them. That's the part he thought would disqualify him completely. He figured his application would never fly, so why bother? Now, remember, he was complaining that he was on 11 different prescription meds. Well, before the stem cells, he was on 20 different prescription meds. And the docs at the stem cell clinic cut him down to about half. I mean, look, he was taking pills for high blood pressure, for arthritis, for various skin conditions, for gastritis, night sweats and night terrors. Yeah, that's right, night terrors. Whatever the hell that is. He was taking pills for insomnia, vertigo, high cholesterol, and on and on. Any of that sound familiar? So anyway, down at the insurance office, when it came to filling out the forms, we conveniently failed to mention any of that. We left that section blank. So far, so good. Next step, the physical. You longtime listeners have probably heard me say that here in Latin America, insurance companies are ever so lenient when it comes to signing up new members. So lenient, in fact, that if you're under 45 years old, normally there's no physical involved at all. But my brother was older than that. So next step, getting a physical. I went into the doctor's office with him, again, because he spoke no Spanish. She gave him a cursory inspection and took a urine sample. Now, my brother was wearing the usual gringo uniform, khaki shorts, which, by the way, always strikes me funny that Latinos wear pants, full long pants, even long-sleeved shirts, even in tropical zones like Panama or the DR, Costa Rica, etc., where it's 90 degrees during the day. But gringos, we can't handle that. So we dress like gringos in shorts. And the locals, they can spot us a mile away. By the way, if and when you do get a Latina girlfriend, she's going to try to change that. She will try to make you un-gringoize your look. Now, admittedly, most of us do need a little help in the fashion department. So go ahead, let her change your look to a point. Just be aware, though, she will throw out lots of the stuff you have in your closet. So hide those Guns N' Roses and Metallica t-shirts. Now, my brother has had various operations on his knee and shoulder cartilage. The doctor immediately saw the scars on his knee and asked, ¿Qué pasó? What happened there? My answer to her was not a lie. I told her my brother played a lot of sports and had some arthroscopic procedures long ago in the past. Then she took his height and his weight, asked a few questions about family history, like any cancer, heart problems, or respiratory diseases in the family? Are your grandparents and parents still alive? Things like that. The appointment was quick. It was over in 10 minutes. On the way out, the insurance broker said, we'll let you know in 2 weeks whether or not you've been approved. Check your email. Well, guess what? 4 weeks later, this is Latin America, you know, that all-important email came, welcoming him into the Humano insurance family. Yep, my brother, who is 50 pounds overweight, on 11 different prescription medicines, a guy who routinely asks for a wheelchair when he's taking an airline flight, was accepted into a very good first world style insurance plan in the DR, a plan that pays 80 to 90%, including prescriptions, with no deductible. Talk about the gringo advantage, huh? As a matter of fact, when we were in the big insurance building and walked in and took a number, waiting to get called, there must have been 100 people sitting around. We were the only two gringos in there. Now, the reason why I tell this story, well, you know the reason, right? To impress the fact upon you weenies out there who are dying to get that plan B going, but you just don't want to leave the country and lose that all-important insurance, especially you Canadian weenies. I know. For you Canadians, it's a big step to dump your national health care. It's been sort of part of your national identity since you've been born, right? I get that, sort of. However, my advice is, come down to Latin America, apply for private health insurance, like my brother did, once you're connected and on board. Well, then who cares about being on the national healthcare system in a country you're no longer living in? You just have to cover your bases and plan ahead. Now, of course, I understand it's a different story if you're in really rotten shape. But man, I'm telling you, you'd have to be in terribly rotten shape to be disqualified in a Latin American healthcare plan. Man, I'll tell you, you just couldn't be in worse shape than my brother. Now, I know, I get it. You're thinking he lied his ass off on the form, right? Well, not really. He just played that clueless, dumb gringo card. that serves us so well in oh so many circumstances. In fact, I just played the Clueless Gringo card myself a couple days ago. Found myself going the wrong way down a one-way street. Now, normally I'd never do that, but it wasn't marked. You see that all the time down here. One-way streets that aren't marked, or they're marked every 7 or 8 blocks. How are you supposed to know, especially if you're approaching that street within the part that's not marked? Anyway, just my luck, there happened to be a motorcycle cop coming right at me. He signaled for me to pull over. I did. Started reading me the riot act, pulled out his ticket book, explaining to me in Spanish it's a one-way and I was going the wrong way. And me, I just rolled down my window, shrugged my shoulders, and gave my best clueless gringo grin and said, Lo siento. I don't speak Spanish. No hablo español. Me, turista. Well, he quit talking for a second, rolled his eyes, waved me on, and said, Vete, vete, which means get moving. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've pulled off a repeat of that scenario. 95% of the time, it works like a charm. That other 5% is when you're on the gringo tourist trail. Like Costa Rica, Belize, most of Mexico. On the tourist trail where the cops speak a little English, that clueless gringo act rarely works. Oh, and once, only once in all these years, there was a lady transit cop that spoke no English. She pulled me over and actually tried to communicate with me using her Google Translate app. And she still let me go. But back to the point. What if, for example, you're in a car accident, you end up in the emergency room, they do a CAT scan on you, see that you've got a few unnamed things lingering from the past. Maybe your spine's been fused with titanium, or you've got some heart stents, and you didn't put that down on your form when you applied for the insurance a half year ago. Well, guess what? It doesn't seem to matter at all, because once you're on a policy, you're on it. In fact, I know a girl, a very beautiful Latina, extremely voluptuous to the point you don't see those kind of bodies coming out naturally. I mean, it's not natural to have those kind of curves. Well, guess what? She's on that very insurance policy my brother's on. She's had implants, a nose job, eye surgery, lip injections, a dozen plastic surgeries, the works. Just recently, she ended up in the emergency room with some kind of gastritis or gastric problem. She went through all kinds of tests, CAT scans, barium contrast injections to check her kidneys, many, many different tests. Well, it turns out she has colitis and a heliobacteria infection and some other nasty gut and intestine problems. She was in the hospital for a week. Insurance covered it all, 80 or 90% anyway. And guess what? When they did all those exams and scans, it was only then they found out she had those implants and fillers, nose job, BBL, you know, Brazilian butt lift, liposuction, and more. It came to light she had all kinds of surgical procedures and pre-existing conditions, too, that she never bothered to mention or put on the form when she applied for the insurance. Now, guess what happened when all that came to light? When that hidden stuff came out and finally was entered on her patient record and files. Guess what the insurance company did? Nothing. No one, not the doctors, the nurses, or the insurance company, mentioned a thing. Now, I don't know what would have gone down if that would have happened up in the States. But down here, it seems to me there's a disconnect. The insurance company really doesn't care all that much what you put on your forms. As long as you're not obese and have uncontrolled diabetes, cancer, or AIDS, they'll bend over backwards to accept you. In other words, it seems to me once you're in, once you pay your first premium, you're in for keeps. On top of that, with every private insurance policy I've seen here in Latin America, they do talk about pre-existing conditions. They have a paragraph in the policy that says, quote, pre-existing conditions will not be covered during the first year of your participation in the insurance program. Now, a few years back when I asked my insurance broker what that was all about, he said that exclusion is in there because some women who know they're pregnant but don't show yet, they don't have insurance, so they'll rush out and try to get some. So basically, he said that's our pregnancy loophole. In other words, you have to be on the policy for at least a year before we cover pregnancy. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying when you apply for private insurance here in Latin America, you shouldn't put down your pre-existing conditions. I'm not saying you shouldn't put down all the surgeries you've had and those 56 meds you're taking. I'm not saying if you don't put that stuff down, you won't get called out on it. It's just that I don't know anyone who ever has been called out on it. Oh, and another thing, when you apply for insurance, there will be a section on those forms asking about your doctors. And you put down the names of your previous doctors, etc. Now, you can do that and be honest about it. The fact is, you should have no fear if you do, because they're never going to call those doctors. They'll never send an inquiry to the doctors you had up in the States or Canada. Your docs up there wouldn't give out that information anyway. No doctor's office up in the States or Canada would send information based on an inquiry from a secretary in a doctor's office or insurance company in a foreign country. Besides that, 99% of the people at your new insurance company in Latin America don't speak English. Fact is, it takes almost an act of Congress for you to get your own records from your doctor in the States. It's that patient-doctor privacy thing. You'd not only have to go down there personally and show them an official government ID, you'd have to fill out all kinds of release forms and sign confidentiality statements, too. All right, enough said about that. But we're not finished with Dave and his email. He mentioned another couple important things in his email, but I bet you weren't paying attention. They went right over your head. It's about the peculiarities of having a Latina girlfriend, man. Those things certainly resonated with me. Number one, the big age gap. Dave mentioned that both he and his buddy are 12 to 15 years older than their Colombian wives. Now, Dave, you guys are up in Canada, but I know where I come from in Chicago. It doesn't matter who you marry. If you got a 10 to 15 year age spread on your lady, you're going to be taking heat gossip and people talking behind your back about it the rest of your life. Especially if she's a hot Latina or foreigner and you're just an average old 5 or 6 yourself. Now, of course, that's not something people would ever bring up to you in your face. Except maybe your friends and relatives and your guy friends, they're just going to be jealous. And for sure, the girls, the ladies in your extended family will not be amused. They'll usually say you're robbing the cradle and all that. She's a gold digger, whatever. So get ready for that. But here's the thing. According to what you told me about your ages when you met and got married in 2008 and 2010, that means your wife was around 33 when you met her. In other words, she's a more mature woman. Lots of guys, gringos and expats, go down to Latin America and find themselves a Latina of their dreams, so they think. They marry her, bring her back to the States, and the guy's maybe 45 or 50 years old, and she's 20 to 25. You know, there's a big maturity difference between a girl that's 20 to 25 years old versus a girl that's 30 to 35 years old. That goes for Latinas and American girls. Especially in today's world, when young 20-somethings are addicted to TikTok, social media, and fashions. You see, the failed relationship stories I always hear about when gringos bring their Latina girlfriends back to the States, it starts out with the fact that once back in the States or Canada, the guy goes back to work, a 40-hour work week usually, and that young Latina bride is stuck at home. She knows no one. She generally doesn't speak English either, and when she goes out to the grocery store, the hairdresser, whatever, who does she bond with? People who speak Spanish, who, of course, are all billionaire brain surgeons, right? Wrong. We're talking about barrio culture, more like baggers and tellers at the grocery store. Besides that, she's probably quite young and beautiful, and guys will be hitting on her all the time at the grocery store, the laundromat, in parking lots, strip malls. And if you, the gringo guy, work 40 or 50 hours a week, and when you come home, you're dead tired, guys usually are when they're on the treadmill, suddenly you're not the free, easy, happy guy you were when you were down in her country on vacation. She finds soon enough she's married to a serious working dude who's got to put in his time every week on the treadmill to crack his nut. Meanwhile, his beautiful 20-something Latina bride, who certainly doesn't know enough English to get a decent job, is stuck at home all day. And when she's out and about, all by her lonesome, she's in a strange new world with lots of temptation. So I'm thinking the secret to your success, Dave, in your marriage with your Colombiana is that when you met her, she was already in her 30s, so therefore more mature and grounded, not susceptible to young guys hitting on her all the time. And as you mentioned, not only does she have a job, she's working with you at the same company. Very unusual. She's not sitting at home bored with no friends, glued to Latino social media, watching soap operas and on TikTok all day, which happens to be the fate of probably 95% of the rest of gringos and expats who find their, quote, soulmate in Latin America and bring her back. In other words, 95% of those stories do not end happily ever after. So, Dave, I congratulate you on being one of the 5%ers, or maybe even 1%ers. You seem to have dodged a bullet there, and I think it's because you found your wife when she was in her 30s, and you got her into the workforce working with you right off the bat. I wonder, though, Dave, when you first brought her home, how did your friends and relatives deal with it? I mean, not just to your face. I mean, what were they saying behind your back? When you win the lottery, friends and family will smile in your face, but deep down, they often resent it. Oh, and Dave, this one last thing you mentioned in your email that we should touch on. You said you're about 2 years away from retirement and saving furiously. You said my wife will likely have to work another 2 to 4 years longer than me until my meager government pension kicks in, you said. But also, and here it is, because we are supporting her parents and partially supporting her sister's family in Colombia. Now, I don't suppose early in the show when I first read that part of your email, I don't suppose many of our listeners picked up on that at all, but that, as it turns out, is an extremely normal occurrence when a gringo or expat hooks up romantically with a Latina. I don't suppose I can think of a single instance where a gringo and expat is not supporting somebody from her extended family. Most often her kid or kids from a deadbeat dad. Hey, I'm not saying it's a bad thing or that you shouldn't do it. I'm just saying, as much as you might not like it, it's going to happen. And even if you don't end up supporting her mom or dad or sister or brother, whatever, you'll feel obligated to help out with many expenses along the way that you never planned on. For example, Uncle Julio dies. You'll be asked, because you're the rich gringo, to kick in for the funeral or for the headstone. Junior's at the dentist. He needs braces. You'll be asked to kick in for that, too. Then there's little sister's quinceañeros party. They'll pass the hat around for that. Of course, you don't have to bite. You don't have to kick in. But man, I'm telling you, when you're sitting in grandma's house in the barrio, and they're living like white trailer trash up in the States and not complaining a bit, well, it's a hard thing not to donate as you know you should. You know if you kick in 50 or 100 bucks, it won't put a dent in your style of living at all. The problem is you can't get nickel and dime to death. 1 week, grandma's TV takes a crap. The next week, it's her refrigerator. It happens all the time, and it's just so hard to say no. It's a fine line, you know, between helping out the extended family and starting to feel like a cash machine. The big problem, though, as I see it, is it starts fostering a kind of dependency on you, the gringo expat, within the family. You didn't sign up to be a safety net. My advice, learn how to say no diplomatically. Oh, and I'm not even talking about when cousin Rafa approaches you at a family get-together and asks to borrow $100, $200, $500, even a grand. That will happen. Just remember, if you do it, you're probably never going to get it back. So the question you have to ask yourself is this. Do you want to have cousin Rafa pissed off at you for a day or two because you said no? Or lend him the money and when he doesn't pay you back, you just know that every time you see him again, and you will, there'll be an awkward, silent moment.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.